Part 4. Chapter 11. Mission. Gilmora, early autumn. Rundal. The Gavanni have stopped advancing from last year's positions, Commander Tellerman said as he displayed the mage map of the region in front of them. After the Dragonfall, they went into cantonments scattered across northern and western Gilmora, captured castles and manors mostly, but some caves and woods as well. We thought they were resting up for a fresh push this spring, but, well, instead they've looted bare what they've captured. And sent raiders against the surrounding settlements, added Marshal Brendol, the new military commander of the campaign. He was a local man, a baron whose lands lay in the eastern part of the war zone. Count Salgo had appointed him and he seemed an able commander. Of course, anyone could seem an able commander in a tent, Rundal thought. We didn't think anything of it at the time, just stirring up trouble, picking off some easy rations. But they weren't just stealing chickens. Those scrugs were taking inventory. As soon as the ground thawed this spring, Tellerman continued, the expected offensive south didn't come. Instead, they began to systematically loot the country bare. Horses, cows, sheep, even some grain. But mostly they came for people. Wherever there was a large settlement, they attacked in force, and then forced to surrender. One of their dark priests, or one of their human lackeys. They're using humans as messengers now, asked Tyndall, surprised. They're using humans in the field now, Brendel said darkly. Light cavalry, mostly, but they're also using them to process the slaves as they come in. A whole evil syndicate. The soulless, sneered Tyndall. Not all, countered Marshal Brendel. The Goblin King's banner attracts those with evil in their hearts. Not all of his servants have survived the sacrifice pits. Some seek power or wealth or release of their debts. Who knows what such folk find alluring? But they coffle their fellow men together like cattle and lead them up the timber road. The murder road, they call it now, the marshal said grimly. And some war magi among them, agreed Tellerman. There are those who are impatient for how the arcane orders distribute witch stones. The rangers of the Iron Band have discovered several such renegades in the penumbra, seeking to slay a shaman and take his tainted stone, or willing to offer themselves in service directly for the chance of being gifted with one. Thankfully, we've seen only a few of them in Gilmora. The dead god's priests cast spells on whole villages, then capture them without slaying them. They fall asleep and awaken in chains, or they are surrounded and offered a bargain, Tellerman said, shaking his head. An emissary will approach under a flag of truce and propose that half of the people will be allowed to flee if the other half are surrendered to them. Of course, the second half rarely sees freedom, nor should they, Marshal Brendel said nastily. He clearly thought ill of such victims, seeing them as traitors to their race. But thanks to their games and the constant skirmishes and raids, most of northern Gilmora is now depopulated. The people are dead, fled, or taken. The fields lie fallow, the castles empty or occupied. A few remote locations still stand, but only at the goblins' sufferance. Probably securing the most prosperous estates for later, Rundal observed. That's what we figure, agreed Tellerman. In the penumbra, we understand, the survivors are put under some token human lord, usually soulless, or enslaved by some Gervan, who speaks the language, with a garrison of Gervani to keep everyone peaceful. The sheer number of people they've harvested is appalling. Our estimates are in the tens of thousands. Over 100,000, he corrected. And the ones they haven't gotten or slain are crowding into the rest of Gilmora, added Brendel, where they'll be nice and ready for next year's harvest. That's assuming they continue their advance, Tyndall said, looking at the map thoughtfully. What if their goal is merely to keep Gilmora depopulated? And do what? Rundal scoffed. Extend the penumbra. Essentially, Tyndall agreed. Extend their area of influence. We've beaten them at several key engagements, and their dragons aren't as effective as they thought. Maybe they're getting overextended. That's one theory and a popular one, Tellerman said as he closed the map. They've sent hundreds of thousands of troops into the field now, and they have been extending their supply chains through foraging and pillaging. There have even been reports of different tribes fighting each other. May the gods bless their efforts. But another theory is that they are preparing for a more concentrated thrust south next year, now that the resistance in the area has been led away in chains. They won't be able to continue without confronting more serious fortifications than the moated manors of northern Gilmora, and a few rivers where we hold the bridges. So what can we do? Asked Rondon. That was the big question. Why did a master war mage like Tarlemont need a couple of half-trained runts like him and Tyndall? We need to establish an outpost deep in their rear, answered Tarlemont, tapping on the map with his finger. Someplace quiet, where we can scout. Perhaps launch attacks from. Actually, we need several, but I want you lads to scout the first one. We need to find out what the Gervani are up to in their largest cantonments. Find out who is still holding out behind their lines, how secure they are, what help they need, and what we can expect from them. We want you two to lead a force to do just that. Establish a secure base in northern Gilmora, begin gathering intelligence, and help the survivors plot a strategy for resistance. But most importantly, find out what the Scruggs are really up to. See what we have to look forward to next spring. And you need both of us to do it? Tyndall asked, eyeing Rondal. Rondal felt disgusted with his fellow. It was clear to him what the utility of the mission was, and why they had been chosen to lead it. It's an important mission, Tarlemont reasoned, and dangerous. There's not going to be much hope of support once you're out there. Odds are one of you is likely to get killed. Tyndall looked puzzled. Well, it's a war zone. I still don't see why you're sending both of us. I like having a spare. Rondal almost gloated at Tyndall over that. Almost. Sir Tyndall, I want you to take a cavalry squad up through Dendara to Castle Hathen. Gather intelligence along the way and make daily dispatches. At Hathen, you'll pick up another squad of cavalry and a baggage train. The supplies will be waiting. Then you'll escort them west through Goblin Country all the way to here, the Barony of Losara. There are several manors in the vicinity that might serve our need as a base. We have a list to choose from. But it is far enough away from their larger cantonments in Murai and Daronel to avoid notice, yet close enough to spy upon them. And while Sir Tyndall leads his expedition of horse, Marshal Brendal said, clearing his throat, Sir Rondal will be awaiting him with a contingent of foot, a squad of medium infantry, plus a few rangers. You'll go with pack horses overland and establish the base. Me? Rondal asked, surprised. I get to go in first. Isn't that the more glorious place in battle? Tyndall smirked. We're trying to avoid open battle, Tarlemont said. Remember, we're there to scout, not to raid, or at least not yet. We need someone competent on the ground who can see to the establishment of a base of operations. From what your masters at Raylan Corps said, Sir Rondal, you're just the man for the job. They did? He asked, surprised. They did? Tyndall asked, confused. They did, Tarlemont assured them both. Rondal's report listed outstanding leadership and tactical abilities, good command instincts, adept at logistics and fortifications, and an excellent grasp of intelligence and strategy. And what did they say about me? Asked Tyndall, his nostrils flaring. That it would be handy to have a spare, shot Tarlemont, annoyed. You both bring value to the operation. We're going to need a secure base and we're going to need a small, deadly, mobile force for future intelligence and resistance operations. You're to establish that base, secure some secondary outposts, and begin relaying field intelligence, including assisting any surviving refugees in escaping south. Eventually, we can use the outposts for offensive operations against their cantonments, but right now we only have a vague idea where they are. Just how long are you anticipating us being deployed? Rondal asked. The scope of what the commander desired from them was more open-ended than he preferred. He did not see the task as insurmountable, but he did not particularly want to winter in a secret base, even in Gilmora's mild clime. Don't worry, you won't be there forever. But we need you to set it up, soothed the head of the kingdom's magical corps. But that's why we need you, specifically. You two are among the few who understand how the Gavani fight, and how they use magic. Once you get the outpost set up, you can be relieved by a non-magical commander. But having your eyes in the field will be more valuable than most. The War Mage didn't sound pleased by making the admission. He was a young man, around the same age as their master, but he had been given responsibility almost as great as Master Menelan, and far more oversight. "So when can we expect reinforcements?" asked Rundahl, suspiciously.
"In 3 or 4 weeks," Brendahl offered. "Assuming that we find the place useful, we can get the men, and you aren't all wiped out to the last man."
"It's us," Tyndall boasted. "What's the likelihood of that happening?"
"That's what happened last time we tried this tactic," Talaman pointed out. "We lost contact, and the next Ranger patrol found the whole company slaughtered in their beds."
"Oh,"
Rundahl said in a daze.
"I'm sure it was just bad luck,"
dismissed Tyndall. After a reflective pause in the conversation grew uncomfortable.
Marimore Manor was a stately, prosperous home once, Rundahl decided, but that had been before the goblin invasion had swept over it. The defense had swept back, and then back over it again. It was a proud lady, harshly used, and the secluded estate showed its distress appallingly. The once meticulously maintained greenery along the roadway was hacked and chewed or overgrown. Grass had begun to sprout along the dirt path leading to its brown stone walls. There was no stock in sight, not a sheep or pig or cow. The fields were empty, unploughed and unplanted, and the village a burnt-out ruin. No one challenged them as they cautiously approached. Rondal's scrying had revealed little evidence of goblins within, although he could not be certain. That they had been here in the past, there was no doubt. The big wooden gate had been rent away. The house had been sacked, and sacked again, until all that was left was debris and the remains of once-hidden camps of refugees within. Broken furniture and empty grain sacks littered the grounds, and carcasses, human, animal, and goblin, rotted into tangled parcels of skin and bones. The rangers who were in the vanguard found plenty of broken goblin darts, vicious little arrows with jagged cast-iron points, and other signs of raiding, but little signs of a heated defense. Though the palace had been looted, it was intact. It had 2 compelling reasons for being a good forward base, to Rundahl's estimation. The manor house was attached to 2 defensible towers within the stout stone wall. While it was far from a true castle, they had provided refuge for the lords of Marimore against their bellicose neighbors at various times. Neither one seemed to have been breached, although the manor that connected them had fallen into disrepair. 60 feet tall, and 40 feet thick at each base, the 2 stone-faced spires were as sound as anyone could expect in northern Gilmora. Rundahl reached Marimore first, at the head of a squadron of 7 mounted infantry and 2 keen-eyed rangers, as well as a portly corporal who drove the 2-wheeled cart and had some facility with tools and carpentry. Their goal was to secure the manor, fortify it as much as possible, and use it as a base to scout the surrounding territory, so the stout fellow was perhaps the most important of them at the moment. Rundahl made certain the corporal could wield a sword as well as a hammer before he included him in the expedition. Marimore was deep behind the rough line that stretched across northern and western Gilmora, now only 70 miles from the official frontier with the Wilderlands to the north. Theoretically, this was goblin territory, but they had seen no recent signs of activity the entire cautious way north. They had passed through almost 12 burned-out villages on the way out here, but they had not seen so much as a Gavani scout during that lonely ride. 2 they had found manor houses still occupied, albeit lightly, their owners or tenants too stubborn to give up their land. Rundahl and his men had taken shelter there, gotten news, and established protocols for staying in touch as a part of a potential escape route. The locals were grateful for the help, but suspicious too. Apparently, there were turncloak humans working with the Gavani now, men and women who would weep and beg entrance, only to unlock gates and open doors in the night. That did not bode well. Rundahl knew that the soulless, the dead god's pet humans, were enthralled to his dark power, but he did not think that they had the wit to behave with such guile. Most were shattered shells of human beings, or so twisted and warped by their time in the dark veil that they were barely human. It didn't take long for his team to secure the place. It was not a huge manor, one of the reasons it was chosen for consideration. The unbreached walls would keep trouble reasonably at bay, and the gates could be repaired, he reasoned. Until then, well, he was a knight mage,
He could enchant a gate with his witchstone, using magic to fortify it if need be. The interior of the manor was atrocious. Rondal himself investigated the upper rooms of the place, a war wand in hand and a mage light floating above him. He had scryed for signs of life, but the results had been spotty for some reason, indicating the presence of someone or something. He proceeded with caution, ready to blast any stray goblins to bits. It was Rondal who discovered that Maramore was not quite as deserted as expected. He heard what he thought was a muffled cough. When he heard the noise, he whirled and peered with mage sight. The battered tapestry before him, torn in several places and starting to mildew, revealed a space behind it under arcane vision, and within that space there was someone. "Come out with your hands where I can see them," he ordered, raising his wand in a mailed fist. The tapestry moved. No one was forthcoming. "This is your last warning," Rondal said in his best military voice. "Reveal yourself now in the name of the king."
"Who are you?"
came a voice from behind the tapestry. It was female and sounded young. He almost relaxed. It wasn't a goblin's harsh voice. "I am Sir Rondal of Sevendor," he began, "in service to the Marshal of Castol, Mage Lord Minelin." "Who the hells are you?" he demanded. The tapestry parted. The threatening end of an arbalest poked through, pointing in his direction, the barbed dart looming ominously less than 10 feet in front of his heart.
"I am Lady Ursella of Maramore,"
the woman, a girl, said haughtily,
"and this is my home you are invading."
That made Rondal snort despite himself.
"I wouldn't be the first, apparently. It's been a while since the maids have come,"
the girl admitted in a shaky voice, her grip on the crossbow steady as she advanced,
"and I've been forced to see to my own security. Tell me, Sir Knight, have I your word that I may come and go in my own home, unmolested?"
"My lady," Rondal said with a grunt, as he put the war wand away. Sure, she was little threat. "As long as you are taller than 5 feet and not covered with black hair, I have no quarrel with you."
4 inches over the limit,"
she smirked anxiously, and lowered the crossbow an inch, but no more.
"Gods be praised. And as you can see, my hair is golden, not black. Brown, more like,"
Rondal said, ignoring the crossbow that was still pointed at him.
"It's golden when I have the chance to wash it properly."
The crossbow quivered mere inches from Rondal's nose.
"Put that thing down," growled Rondal, looking around. "Are there any more?"
"Any more what?"
the girl asked, mystified.
"Any more refugees?"
Rondal demanded. "Is there anyone else who is going to pop out with an arbalest and make my day interesting, and perhaps get themselves killed?" Finally, the girl let the crossbow fall.
"No, Sir Knight,"
Lady Ursella said, reluctantly.
"I am all that is left of my line, if my brothers and father are dead, as I believe."
"So what happened?" Rondal asked, not seeing any other sign of life.
"I was here with my maids,"
she said carefully, "when the first news of the invasion came. My father and brothers were called to their banners. I stayed here with 6 men-at-arms and a few servants.
We were here for days, with no news. But when it came, it was all bad. Goblins, hundreds of them, swept over the countryside. Some raided Maramore, and one night some ferocious beast banged on our gates with its fists until they collapsed."
"A troll," Rondal nodded. "Then what happened?"
"They captured or killed the others,"
she said, her face growing pale.
"Mostly captured. They wanted them alive, I think."
"Why weren't you taken?" Rondal asked suspiciously.
"Me? Why? I had a place to hide. My family has been in Maramore for 70 years. There are hidden places of refuge in times of attack. I hid myself there while my servants were taken away."
"When was that?"
2 months ago,
she said weakly.
2 months of hunting and running and hiding and eating. Well, let's not discuss what I have eaten. But Maramore is still held," she said,
hefting the crossbow over her shoulder. "And as long as Maramore is held, then we have not lost.
I take it my father sent you?"
she asked expectantly. "Who was your father?"
"Sir Hagen of Maramore,"
she asked, holding her breath.
"My brother was Sir Hagarath. House Maramore, of course,"
she added, as if she might forget. "I've heard no tale of them, dead or alive," Rondal said reluctantly.
We're not exactly a rescue party, Rondal admitted. We're here to establish an outpost. To observe, he emphasized. We're not here to drive the goblins back, yet.
When does that happen? She demanded.
Not soon enough, Rondal said. I have but 7 men with me, and I expect a like number in a few days, God's willing. But we are here to scout out the Scruggs, not rout them. Have you seen any recently?
I go look in the daytime at the top of the tower, she said, biting her lip. It's scary, but I've spotted them before. I just don't want to be seen myself, but I haven't seen anyone in days.
At least a week, she decided. And then it was but 2 scouts, and one of those horrible dogs of theirs.
Dogs? Rondal asked, curious. Some beastly mastiff, I think. More wolf than dog,
Arcella decided. Though I've never seen a wolf so fearsome.
Some devilry of the dead gods' priests, I'd wager, Rondal decided, setting a stool to rights in the ruin. But that does not bode well, if he is using our own beasts against us. They rode hound-drawn chariots at Castle Cambrian, he recalled. I'll have to report that.
See, she said, almost smiling, I've proven useful already.
Why should that matter? Rondal asked.
Because I am one woman in a ruined manor, surrounded by men who can defend her or defile her.
Rondal realized why she was fearful. If you are the lady of the manor, he said carefully, then as a knight it is my duty to defend you in a time of war. My men will not defile you. You have my word. Arcella caught her breath.
And you?
I'm not in the mood to defile anyone, Rondal said wearily. I'll let you know if that changes. Right now, I want to know if you think it's safe to light a fire in the Great Hall. If the gate is guarded, that is.
I've chanced small fires a few times, she admitted. Just enough to boil some water. Make some porridge. If the gate is guarded, then I don't see the harm.
In fact, she said, straightening, if you are to be so valiant as to offer the Lady of the Manor protection, Sir Knight, then it is my gracious duty to see to your men as best as the hospitality of this poor hall can allow. Rondal smiled in return. Then we have an agreement. As to supplies, we have a small store and more to come, but we expect to forage.
I can tell you where you might find a cache or two, laid in against such times, or overlooked, she agreed, and I will be happy to cook for you and your men while you are my guests. As soon as a proper fire is laid on the hearth,
she suddenly looked very thin and terribly hungry. When the rest of the compound was secured, and proper wards were set, Rondal detailed one of his men to duty on watch in the northern tower, and put another 2 on the gate. The balance he allowed a chance to rest and eat, after their beasts were tended. The fire in the grand old hearth in the great hall was rekindled by the lady of the manor, and after it was fed with the shards of a broken trestle that had been used as a shield, she began to boil water in a copper kettle she produced. The company's store of beans and salt pork was raided, and soon the smell of savory soup filled the desolate hall. While the soup was cooking, Lady Arcella excused herself upstairs. She returned soon after wearing a gown of dark gold and black, a bronze noble circlet tying back her hair, which she had freshly brushed and banded. It may have been golden, Rondal conceded, if it was clean and the light bright enough. She devoured the soup wolfishly, after serving his men and himself, her eyes darting around the door they had turned into a table in the main hall. She asked for news, and they gave her what they could.
Most of northern Gilmora is deserted now, Rondal explained. Most of the peasants have either fled south or been taken north in chains. The warriors have either died defending their homes or are in a strange castle hundreds of miles south. Barrowbell is the last great defended city.
Barrowbell? They've gotten all the way to Barrowbell?
Arcella asked, her mouth agape in a most unladylike way.
Nearly,
Rondal agreed, sadly. We've managed to hold them, only they aren't actually pushing any further. They aren't holding castles like they did in the Penumbra. They raid, they enslave, they slaughter, they pillage, but then they move on. They are looting it bare, but they are not trying to hold Gilmora.
That's strange, she agreed. But the gods alone know what drives the minds of the goblins, she said distastefully.
They have minds like any men, and they make war better than most, admitted one of the men-at-arms at the far end of the table. You don't raid a country bare. Not like that.
So why?
She asked, pouring another bowl of soup. That's one of the things we're here to find out, Rondal nodded. You don't happen to have a map of the area, do you?
I believe there were some maps in my father's chamber,
Arcella nodded, but I don't know if they survived the pillage. Rondal knew that most lords and castellans kept such maps to keep property rights straight. Often a manor's maps were quite extensive. If you don't mind looking for them, they would be a great help. We have a well inside, and the walls are stout once we repair that gate. But we'll soon run out of this bounty, he said, distastefully eyeing the soup. Where might we find more? Surely not every inch of Gilmora is scoured.
I have a few ideas, she admitted. Places to go where I was afraid to go myself.
With you and your stalwart men, she said, smiling warmly. Perhaps we can risk it. By day.
I'll not fight goblins in the dark, if I can help it, agreed Rondal. We have another caravan arriving soon, and another beyond that. But we will have to exist on forage as much or more than our baggage trains. The Gavani have proved adept at raiding our caravans, he said, annoyed. We also intend on stopping the flow of prisoners into the penumbra, both from here and from the other end of the timber road.
Why are they taking so many prisoners? She asked anxiously. What are they doing with them all?
Slaves, one of the men told her. Sacrifice. And rations.
Rations? Oh,
Arcella said, horrified.
They eat people.
After the sacrifice part, agreed Rondal. They dry the flesh and distribute it to their armies. Never eat a goblin's lunch, he said disparagingly. It might just be someone you know.
That's revolting, she gasped, looking ill.
I thought they would just hold them for ransom.
Goblins aren't Gilmoran gentlemen playing at dynastic feuds, Rondal said darkly. They intend to exterminate every human being on Kalador. They may keep a few alive to help the process along, but I have no doubt as to their goal.
Dear gods,
Arcella said, her eyes dazed.
All those people.
That's why we're here, Rondal assured her. We're looking at how we can stop them from continuing. The northern third of Gilmora is the most sparsely peopled region. What happens when they turn to the more populated south? We think they were just getting started with their invasion last summer. This year, they're setting up their structures. Next year, well, imagine 100 trolls, all in a row, knocking over every castle in sight, or dragons digging through the ruins of our strongest fortresses to get at the yummy parts inside.
All those people,
she repeated, her face ashen.
My lords, I think I will retire for the evening.
With that, she got up and left, a taper in her hand. Rondal felt badly about telling her the truth, but there was no escaping the horror of the Gavani invasion. If anything, he had spared her the worst of what he'd heard went on within the penumbra. The makeshift torture camps, the sacrifice pits turned into butcheries, the sadistic and cruel contests the goblins forced the humans into, pitting them against each other in contests designed to maim and hurt, but only rarely kill. That privilege was reserved for the priests of the dead god. Rondal listened to the girl's footsteps as she mounted the stairs, crossed to her chamber, and locked the heavy door from within. Then silence. Then, just barely in the range of his hearing, he heard sobs of despair.
Rondal's first priority was securing the perimeter of their new home. Repairing the gate was a big job, and though the portly corporal had some skill with wood, Rondal could do little more than prop one of the doors up and wedge it into place, push the cart in front of it that first night, and ward the opening as tightly as he could. Thinking of the poor noble woman within, he warded the entire manor compound heavily, placing sigils, wards, and active spells wherever they might do the most good, to take the place of guards he did not have yet. Lady Arcella set to making herself useful, for which Rondal was grateful. The last thing he needed was an idle body around while he and his men toiled. Arcella seemed quite capable for a noblewoman, willing and able to carry water, build a fire, and cook with greater facility than he would have expected. She was also quite friendly, smiling at the men as they came on and off duty, and always willing to pitch in to help with some project where nimble hands were better suited. Despite the ruined condition of the hall and the manor in general,
The girl was surprisingly able to locate several key items in the rubbish, from shears to rope, when asked. She was also instrumental in setting the place to rights, more or less, indicating exactly what sheds and cots had been used for what purpose. She was replete with knowledge on the habits of the various servants, the manor officials, and even her own family. Rondal wrote it off as a nervous girl in a bad situation babbling, but he learned a bit about her past life at Maramore during her ranting, and he soon felt sorry for Arcella. Rondal took the former castellan's chamber in the northern tower as his own, as it had a good view and most of a bed, and there were a few maps and such rolled up and tucked away in the rafters. Many were years out of date, but the rivers and bridges had not moved, even if the domains and their owners had. He spread the largest map out over one wall, and attached it with a spell so he could imagine the countryside around him. He transferred most of the physical features to a mage map he was building, allowing him to see where potential allies, enemies, and unlooted provision might be hidden. He kept in contact with both Terlaman and Tyndall, who was taking a different route, but was bringing 20 men and a wain of supplies with him. They helped fill in details about specific areas and sightings of the foe from rangers skulking through the deserted fiefs of Gilmora. Telemann had news about Arcella's family the third day at Maramore. They brought 9 lances to Cantinal and thence to Domara. That's one of the places where the dragons attacked, a week after they probably arrived. Right after the attack, when the survivors were regrouping, the place was sacked by 2 legions of hobgoblin infantry. There weren't many survivors. I will check, but in all likelihood the girl really is the last of her line. So what do I do about her? It's her manor, legally, Terlaman advised. We can use it under order of the king and even compensate her. But since her father and his liege above him, are all dead, I'd say she'd be better off abandoning the place and moving south with the rest of the refugees. I'll suggest it, Rondal replied doubtfully. But I don't think she'll go. Then let her stay. But she's living in an active war zone. You could be ordered to abandon that manor at any time and withdraw all protection. Make certain she understands that. If she still wants to stay, that's between her and the gods. Tyndall was less severe when Rondal solicited his advice after reporting their success, mind to mind. Is she comely? Was the first thing he asked. When Rondal assured him that under the dirt she was likely a lovely girl, his fellow apprentice was convinced. Then keep her around. It keeps a certain element of class to the place. You haven't even seen the place. If it's at all like the last 3 manors we've seen, it needs all the class it can get. Besides, what else can you do? Until someone is headed south, you're stuck with her, and we're going to be there a while. So it's a good thing she's not bad to look at. Rondal didn't have much to say in response to that. In truth, he had begun to notice Lady Arcella as a woman, and he felt guilty about it. After all, this was her home. If Sire Kay had taught them anything, he had taught them the demands of hospitality, and feeling lustfully toward your hostess was never appropriate, particularly if a knight had her at a disadvantage. It was the duty of a knight to defend the defenseless, he reasoned, not annoy them with unwanted suits. He explained Commander Terlaman's position and proposal to her that afternoon, during their first real meal in the Great Hall. She tearfully took the news of her family's probable demise, then agreed to let the patrol set up their outpost at Maramore. She had very, very pretty eyes, he noted. Eyes like, well, eyes he found alluring. Warm and friendly despite her condition. Rondal suppressed a desire to be forward with the defenseless girl anyway, and chided himself from such thoughts. He could be stalwart about it, his brain insisted. He was, he kept reminding himself, a professional, a knight mage. He didn't exactly avoid Arcella after that, but he didn't seek her out, either. Instead, he busied himself with restoring the manor's limited defences. He spent the next day directing earth elementals he conjured to clear out a trench and build a short, 5-foot-tall earthen dike around the manor to improve its profile. Good, easy, magical work. A lot like directing trained dogs, he often thought. Good work a man could get lost in. Only it was difficult to keep his mind away from his hostess when she sought him out on purpose. A few hours after noon, she appeared with a basket, dressed in a red gown and a black mantle. She'd even donned a wimple.
"I thought you might be hungry," she said, smiling as he allowed the spell to fade,
the piles of dirt falling into place where they'd fallen out of existence.
"I brought a few things. There wasn't much. I'm just grateful for you sharing."
She spread a cloth over a boulder his excavations had revealed and sat the basket upon it.
"You're right. It wasn't much,"
he agreed, "but it looks like you've lived on less."
"A lady learns to be resourceful,"
she said, biting her lip.
"I found a ham in the rafters of the smoke shed the second week. It felt like a feast. It only lasted a week. Then I boiled the bone. Most of the food in the kitchens is long gone. But I'm wondering if the village..."
"There's not much left to the village," Rondal said gently, as she removed a parcel of griddle cakes from the basket. "I don't know the last time you were there."
"Not since the men marched away,"
she said guiltily, pulling some cold grilled sausages out of the hamper.
"I went to see them off. The castellan and my father. And all the men in the village went, and all the men at the manor. Only a few were spared. The others left to go to Castle Dormerar, where the Baron and his men were holding out."
"So why didn't you go?" he asked curiously.
"They wanted me to, of course," she said, looking away. "I should have. But I couldn't bear to leave Maramore all alone. Alone and undefended."
"So, how is your valiant defense going?" Rondal asked with a chuckle, as he took a griddle cake. "The last time I checked, you had but 3 quarrels left in your quiver and had slain but 1 goblin."
"It was a big goblin,"
she assured him, a little irritated. "Hiding from goblins is a perfectly acceptable tactic for a lady." "And so is shooting it in the back," Rondal laughed. She had regaled the squadron of her 1 brush with combat a few weeks prior. She had taken a lone goblin scout, who was looking for loot in her manor hall by surprise, shooting it in the back of the neck from a hiding place. She even proudly showed them the body, which she had dragged out to the midden pile.
"But what would have happened if I'd followed the rest of the folk of Maramore?" she asked. "I'd be as dead as they are," she said sadly.
"It's a war," he said, trying to comfort her. "People die. Not just soldiers. Not in this war."
"What do you know about it?"
she demanded crossly, a tear in her eye. "Was your home destroyed by goblins?"
"Yes,"
he said sharply. "Mine was one of the first. Away in the Mindens, in a tiny valley called Beauval Vale. Hundreds of my friends perished. I barely escaped with my life." He hadn't meant to sound bitter about it. He rarely thought about the home of his boyhood now. But her bitterness made him angry. She wasn't the only one suffering in the war.
"I apologize,"
she said, wiping away a tear.
I'm new to this, being the lady of the manor and all."
"I've just recently been made a knight," he admitted. "Just over a year. I'm not very good at it, either."
"You seem to do well,"
she said, handing him an apple. They hadn't brought any apples. It must have been from her private store.
"Your men look to you like my father's men did to him."
"That's not the same as knowing what you're doing," he said, shaking his head. "Most of these men are older than me. But they are all regular soldiers, not militia, and they know how to follow orders. Good orders," he added.
"Well, I think you do it well,"
she said sincerely, "and I cannot thank you enough for your assistance here, Sir Rondal." "It's just a bit of errantry," he dismissed, blushing a little. She seemed a little too grateful.
"It's gracious of you to think so,"
she said, brushing a lock of hair behind her ear. She was right, Rondal realized. In the sunlight, her hair was kind of golden.
"I know that you are just on a mission, but I'm happy that your mission brought you to Maramore," she said softly.
Her hand reached out and touched his. Rondal was very self-conscious, but he found his hand caressing hers. It was soft, softer than his by far. Her fingers seemed long and thin and almost childlike next to his. Once the hands of a scholar, they now had sword calluses, and his wrists were far thicker than they'd been a year ago. They seemed to dwarf hers.
"Lady Arcella," he began softly, but uneasily, "it would not be proper. Let's leave propriety to the bride sisters," she said, rolling her eyes. "I have been here in this manor alone for weeks. Now a handsome young knight arrives with food and protects me. Propriety is for formal balls, not war zones. Still,
Rundle said, reluctantly pulling his hand away,
while I admire you, my lady, and feel, well, it would not be proper for me to discuss how I feel under any circumstances I can think of. It would complicate matters with my command. For now, he said, deliberately pushing her hand back into her lap, I think it best if we keep to a professional relationship. Perhaps later. I am at your disposal, Sir Knight, she said a little awkwardly. I suppose if we were to become intimate, your men would indeed grow restless,
Rundal finished for her, in a war zone, at a deserted outpost. Propriety is sometimes all that keeps a soldier's baser nature at bay. If I do not live by it and keep discipline here and now,
I understand, she smiled. I like you, Sir Rundal. You are a gentle man for a soldier.
Knight, mage, he said, his throat dry.
Actually, I'm a knight mage. I've never heard of that, she said,
leaning uncomfortably close to him.
We're new,
he said absently. She was so close he could smell her breath. It was sweet, like an apple.
We should get back, he said reluctantly. It's late afternoon. I have to inspect the pickets and change the guard, and tomorrow we go into the village and see what's left of it.
Arcella nodded, looking a little ashamed as she packed up the picnic. But when she walked back with him, he carried the basket, and she held his hand the whole way. Marimore Village was actually two villages, Marimore Village proper, and then a hamlet a half mile down the road called Argan. The former was devoted to the cotton fields and cornfields that were the heart of Marimore's domain, while Argan was devoted to growing tobacco. Both were deserted, and Marimore Village was largely burned to the ground. Lady Arcella accompanied Rundal and two of the men on the short expedition, and from the moment she saw the circles of stumps, where once peasant cots had stood, she burst into tears. She ran from hovel to hovel in the former village, naming the people who once lived there. Rundal only half heard what she was saying, as it came out half a mumble, but he could tell she was terribly distressed.
Most left with mother, she said sadly. Some stayed, at least for a while, but then the goblins came. They fought, but I hid.
It was what you were supposed to do, soothed Rundal, looking around anxiously. There hadn't been any sign of goblins nearby since they arrived, but with the girl making so much noise.
I know, she sobbed, but it's not fair that they're dead and I'm...
Calm yourself, Lady Arcella, Rundal said, dismounting and pulling her to him by the shoulders. Lady Arcella, he repeated two or three times as he looked into her eyes. It was as if she couldn't remember her own name. Finally, she caught his eye and was brought back into the present.
Oh, dear, is she in trick?
She said, tears in her eyes.
What a sight! I must look, but...
You said you might know where some food was overlooked, Rundal reminded her.
Food,
she repeated dumbly, then took possession of herself again.
Yes,
she assured him.
I believe I do.
Aunt G always kept some back from the reeve, she explained, as she kicked the dirt aside from the edge of a burnt-out hovel.
She died a few days before the first reports came in, and they were going to settle her will, but then everyone got called to their banners. I don't think anyone remembered, she said,
reaching down and pulling up the edge of a doorway hidden in the dirt.
She had this root cellar,
Arcella explained triumphantly, and she always kept some extra. She reached down into the hole she had revealed and began pulling up food.
Cheese,
she said, pulling out two small wheels of peasant-made cheese.
A sack of wheat flour, a half sack of barley, half sack of oats. Look,
she said, grinning, as she struggled to pull a jar from the ground.
Pickled eggs.
There was actually a fair amount of food stashed within the old root cellar, enough to feed his men for a week or more, if they were careful, he guessed. The last jar Arcella pulled from the pit was the most promising, though. It was a large crock with a wooden lid, and when he pulled it off, Arcella wrinkled her nose.
Ale,
Rundal grinned, and quite far gone if poor Aunt G made it before she died. A few months' worth. This should be a proper drink. The other men were pleased by the find, too.
I wonder if there are any more caches around, he said, summoning power from his stone. He shaped a spell that would tell him of any hidden chambers, and cast it. To his pleasure he found two more, neither as large as Aunt G's, but yielding several more days' worth of food. Let's scout the hamlet, too, he suggested, once the provisions were stored on the horses. While we're here, I at least want to ensure there aren't any Gavanni lurking about. His fears were unfounded. Argun was even more burnt out than Maramore village. The lonely row of huts and cots near the road looked desolate without thatch on them, and the burnt stumps of the walls sometimes concealed human remains. Only one cache was discovered there, a mere sack of potatoes and a measure of rye flour. The expedition proved fruitful in other ways, however. Look, Sir Ronald, one of his rangers, Fursar, said, as he examined the rough track that bisected the hamlet. Tracks. Fresh. Some human and some... not. Rondell came over to examine the impressions. I'm no tracker, Fursar. What do they tell you? Four Gavanni came this way, probably 4 or 5 nights ago, he pronounced. They had 2 humans with them. A woman and a man, looks like. Are you sure they were here at the same time? Rondell asked in a low voice. Positive, my lord. The soldier grunted. See how that Gavanni print overshadows the human? And then this human print overshadows the Gavanni. They were here at the same time, no doubt, he assured. Slavers, then, Rondell said, his eyes narrowing, picking up the remnants. You are lucky they strayed no further from the road, Lady Arcella, he called. Can we go back to Maramore now? She asked, shivering under her mantle. I think we've found enough, Rondell agreed. We know there have been goblins here. We know there have been people here. Let's hope we can avoid both, at least until our relief arrives. Dinner was a merry feast, as not only had the stores been replenished by the foraging expedition, but also one of the men had had luck with his arbalest. A fat goose was waiting for Arcella to dress when they returned. Rondell expected the noblewoman to blanch at the idea of plucking and cleaning the fowl, but Arcella pitched in excitedly. She found the prospect of goose tempting. Rondell had a large fire in the main hall and oversaw the roasting himself. Some roasted potatoes, cheese, some biscuits baked in the fire, and a few more sausages from their original stores filled their bellies. Aunt G's final brew filled their hearts. Rondell sat at the opposite end of the trestle-door table from Lady Arcella, as if they were lord and lady in a hall, surrounded by their knights. Their knights, being rough peasant infantrymen, their hall drafty and bare, and their fare of the commonest sort. At least the ale was fit for a king, he decided. Rondell found himself feeling almost lordly, and caught himself smiling at Arcella in the mage light several times. Is this what it's like? He wondered. Is this what Sire Kay and Master Min are so enraptured of? He studied Arcella when she wasn't looking at him, catching her in mid-laugh. She was comely, he decided, and very warm, intelligent and friendly. She teased with the men without being disrespectful or inviting rude jests, he noted, and carried herself proudly, mostly. Every now and then he caught her off guard, just being a girl, and not the lady of the manor. It was at those times he found her most appealing. His attention was noted by Fursar, the Gilmoran ranger from the south. Watch that one, lad, he warned in a fatherly tone. She's a quick wit and a pretty face, but there's something amiss about her. More than meets the eye, he said, tapping his cheek meaningfully. Oh, I don't have an eye for her, Rondell said unconvincingly. She's just a poor girl in a rough spot, scared and desperate. And that's not cause enough for caution, Fursar asked, amused. I'll not call fair foul without cause, my lord, but just watch yourself. She's the sort who always wants to stay on top and will do what she must to stay there. A survivor, he admitted approvingly. But that's not the best sort for a man such as yourself, my lord. A lot can happen in a war zone. Rondell tried to dismiss the man's warning as misplaced, that Arcella was just being friendly and grateful, until she tapped at the door to his chamber that evening. Is there something amiss, my lady? He asked, tiredly, as he checked the wards. No, not really, Arcella said, biting her lip. I wanted to know if my lord would be interested in a game of dice, and a cup of cheer before bed, she asked, hesitantly. I found this stashed away in Father's
things,
she admitted, offering a small, ornate, cut-glass bottle filled with some honey-coloured spirit. And I quite enjoy a game of chasers, if you've a mood to pass the time. A lady alone with a man in his chambers, he clucked. How improper. Consider it a military consultation with the civilian leadership, then, she said, pushing past him. Her hair smelled delicious to him, and kept him from mounting a credible defence. Besides, she rationalised, who is going to know? Or care? I don't have a good argument for that, save that we will, Rondell stumbled. Good, because I trust me, and I trust you implicitly, she said gamely, as she pulled the stool over to the small table. Find some glasses, Sir Rondell, she said as she opened the board. I feel like a game. Reluctantly, but eagerly, Rondell found two small earthenware cups and poured the spirits while Arcella set up the board. It was a simple game, a peasant's game, a child's game. She won handily the first time, teasing Rondell into mounting a spirited second game. He laughed with her easily, finding speaking to her something that came naturally. She put him at ease, and she smiled at him, a lot. So what do you think is going to happen to Maramore? She asked, after he barely managed to win the second game. The spirits were almost gone. It's in the middle of a war zone, Rondell said, after some thought. As much as I'd like to, I can't see us retaking this region in force any time soon. As fast as troops are arriving in the garrisons south of here, they're going into a defensive posture, preparing to receive another advance, not make one of their own. So, Maramore will be lost, she said sadly. Mayhap, Rondell shrugged. It's a pretty place, or was once, but without the village it's just a big house. Without the peasants to plant the cotton and the tobacco crops, it's useless. It's useful to us now because it's remote, relatively defensible and disposable, he said apologetically. If the goblins advance, we leave it behind. And me? That would be unchivalrous, he said, swallowing. Something about her vulnerability was playing on him like a sweet, sorrowful tune. I'm sure we can find some room for you, and there's always the possibility that the goblins will all just go home. He smiled. She gave him a smile for courtesy, but she was not happy.
Oh, Rondell, what am I going to do?
She said tearfully.
I'm alone. My family is dead. I have a manor that no one wants, lands that are useless, and no hope of much else.
You seem very resourceful, Rondell said, knowing how awful that sounded the moment he said it.
Something will come along. Like what? What use am I? A scullion for rangers at the edge of ruin, with no hope. Some hope,
Rondell said insistently. Surely there is something that could be salvaged from this, he said, gesturing around. Every lord keeps secret treasuries.
If my father had such, he neglected to inform me, she sighed. I think he took most of it with him.
Something will turn up, Rondell said, without much enthusiasm.
Don't worry. We'll take care of you.
I'm supposed to help survivors, after all. But we're a long way from pulling out, and for now Maramore is my headquarters. Once the rest of my men arrive, we'll begin our work in earnest. Who knows? He added hopefully. Maybe I can secure some funds for you for the use of the place.
That would be helpful,
she agreed.
I don't have much, but if I did have to flee, some money would be helpful. Oh, thank you, Rondell. You gave me hope when I didn't have any, and a game of chasers.
Before he knew what was happening, she kissed him, not long and not insistently, but gratefully.
Thank you,
she repeated, and kissed him again before leaving.
You're welcome,
Rondell said to the back of the door after she left. With the immediate issue of supplies at bay, Rondell ordered the men to stay close to Maramore and see to its repair for the next few days. He kept scrying the surrounding country, but no Gavanni came within miles of the place. Without a reason to leave the outpost, Rondell focused on the defences. It would never stand to a real siege, he remarked at breakfast the next morning. One battering ram and that door would come apart. The towers, too, more decorative than functional. It was an observation, not a judgment, but Arcella took it personally.
Hey,
she protested, as she brought the big pot of tea to the table.
Maramore has withstood dozens of attacks.
Bandits, grunted one of the men, or petty feuds between lordlings.
not a proper siege. It'll keep out a pissed-off knight, mayhap, but at all, not bloody likely.
It has so, she insisted. It's as good as a proper castle.
It's our outpost, Rondal said firmly, and regardless of what it was, we are living in it as it is, and as it is, it leaves much to be desired. As soon as the cavalry contingent arrives, we're going to start scouting the nearby manors. Which ones would those be, milady?
Huh? Oh,
Arcella said, startled. You should probably start with Ketral Manor, and then Faroon Manor. They're both nearby, I believe, she said. She didn't sound too sure. But there's no telling what's happening there, is there?
That's why we're going, Rondal reminded her,
to find out.
She was quiet after that, but he could tell she was not happy with the idea of exploration. He supposed he could see her perspective. After weeks on her own, having a bunch of soldiers around with sharp swords made her feel safe. Thinking about them running off and attracting trouble back to her manor probably worried her. That afternoon, she joined him again, as he finished the dike and ditch around the manor wall. She brought lunch again, and she also brought her arbalest.
I want you to teach me to shoot properly, she proposed. I got lucky with that one goblin. Next time I don't want to depend on luck.
It's not very ladylike, he teased.
Neither is dying for a soup pot, she retorted. Are you going to teach me, my lord?
So he taught her. The mechanism was a bit different than the ones he'd used at Raylan Kor, and far more complex than the simple crossbows made in the Wilderlands. It was also more ornate, to the point where it barely looked like a tool of war. But the bow was strong, the catch was easy to operate, and teaching her to use the slide windlass wasn't difficult. In 2 hours she was hitting the target, her wimple laid upon a pile of dirt, from 30 paces, reloading and hitting it again within the span of 20 heartbeats.
You're very good at this,
he remarked, as she put a third quarrel inside the circle.
I'm surprised your father never taught you.
Sir Hagen felt that such pursuits were better left to his fosterling sons, not his daughters, she sniffed.
Needlework. Now that was a craft for a lady.
She sounded rueful about it. She was far from the only noblewoman who disliked needlework. It was a common complaint.
Probably a good thing,
Rondal decided, with your temperament.
My temperament?
She asked mockingly, as she loaded a fresh quarrel into the slot.
Whatever do you mean?
She let fly a little too quickly, and missed the mark, by less than an inch.
You seem to like to act rashly,
he pointed out.
How so?
She asked, halting her practice and staring at him. Well, the decision to leave the evacuation and return to Maramore, for one thing, he pointed out.
Sir Hagen left good people behind, she protested. It wasn't right that they were here without protection.
And you protected them
how?
Rondal asked patiently. Arcella blushed.
They should have at least had some representation from House Maramore, she said proudly. It is the least the family could do after abandoning them like that.
Yet your father felt otherwise, and you disobeyed him.
I'm alive, aren't I?
She asked defensively. And yet the people you came to protect.
You think I wanted that?
She objected.
So I acted rashly. When I heard that thing breaking down the big gates, I ran and hid. One of my servants, the brave girl, insisted on it. Only there was only room for one,
she said tearfully. Rondal felt awful. He had been having a reasonable discussion. He hadn't meant to invoke such a painful memory. But something in the way Arcella spoke told him she was desperate to talk about it.
It was a horrible night, she said,
setting down the bow and sinking to the ground. Rondal stooped closer to listen.
They came just after midnight.
They had already burned the village, after taking the few people left there. There were only a score of us here then, all that was left.
We thought we were safe. The gate was shut and locked. We thought they'd passed us by, but we were wrong. They howled,
she said, her face streaked with tears.
A terrible noise, like a
goblin's war cry, supplied Rondal with a faint, sympathetic smile.
I'm familiar with the sound. They chanted. A few could speak our language, in a way. It sounded horrible in their foul voices. They called for us to open the gate, even as they started a fire. Then that troll came and bashed down the gates instead. The men fired at it, but it barely noticed their bolts.
They're dumb that way, agreed Rondal. It takes a lot to kill a troll.
Hard to do, even with a crossbow. Mostly it just pisses them off.
This one wasn't happy,
she agreed, nodding her head with tears in her eyes. But after it bashed the gate down, they just swarmed in, the goblins. The men drew swords and the goblins only had clubs, but they...
There were just too many,
she whispered. That's when the servant girl insisted I go to my hiding place. She closed it just as the goblins pushed the manor hall doors open. I heard them come for her. I heard her screaming right outside as they took her. I heard,
oh dear God, Sir Rondell, I heard her beg for mercy, and then she just stopped.
Probably fainted, or was knocked unconscious, Rondell said weakly. We didn't see much sign of blood.
I hope.
I know, Rondell said comfortingly. I know that feeling. You can't dwell on it, though, or it will eat you alive. I know, he repeated with emphasis. Trust me, you can't. You can't wish someone alive again. Not even with magic.
Of course you can't,
she agreed absently, but it was horrible. I'm sorry, he said, taking her hand. Without realizing it, he was suddenly embracing her, and she was sobbing into his neck. He felt awkward and helpless. He had no idea what to do. Rondell decided to just hold her and let her sob, because he didn't have any better plan. He knew Tyndall would. He'd know exactly what to do to appear sophisticated, cocky, and charming. Rondell felt like a manure-smeared, rustic halfwit. As if in response to his thoughts, Tyndall chose that moment to contact him mind to mind. Rondell wasn't nearly as appreciative of his advice as he thought he'd be.
What?
Rondell responded to Tyndall's overture.
What's wrong?
Tyndall asked anxiously.
Are you under attack?
No, just...
What do you want?
We're about a day from you now. We just hit that big village you went through. We didn't see any sign of Gavanni, but I didn't expect to.
Oh,
all right. I guess we'll get ready for you, then.
What is it?
Tyndall asked.
I have a girl on me. Congratulations,
Tyndall said. If Rondell didn't know better, he would have thought his fellow apprentice was being genuine. That idea disturbed him more than the thought of him being sarcastic.
What's the problem?
She's crying.
That's not a problem,
Tyndall assured.
Hells, that's great.
You're really not helping this situation.
Just kiss her. Tell her everything will be okay and change the subject. Trust me.
But things aren't going to be okay, Rondell said evenly.
Of course not. We're all swimming in the dead god's chamber pot now, but that's the last thing she wants to hear. So I should lie to her?
Rondell asked, hesitantly.
Well, yes,
Tyndall replied. Rondell could imagine his eyes rolling. Believe it or not, it would not be the first time a man has lied to a woman.
Don't let it worry you. It's not an important thing. You're just trying to get her to feel better. And you're not lying to her, if you want to be technical. You just have a broader vision of what okay is,
he said philosophically.
But she's sobbing hysterically now, Rondell said. I can feel it on my shoulder. That's excellent. Let her get it out. That's all she wants to do for now. Let her get it out. Lie to her. Change the subject.
This is really not sounding like the kind of advice Lady Alia would give.
Lady Alia doesn't know much about courting women, Tyndall retorted. I'm not saying ravish her, you idiot. Just give her a kiss, a comforting kiss. Give her a place of stability in a wild and chaotic world.
What if she doesn't want to kiss me? Asked Rondell worriedly, as Arcella seemed to break down even further.
Don't give her the option, Tyndall recommended. Really, just take the matter out of her hands. It's a kiss, not a marriage proposal. If she doesn't want it, she'll let you know.
This is really making me uncomfortable, Rondell said as he shifted uncomfortably.
It's kissing,
Tyndall dismissed. That's what it's supposed to do. Just get her calmed down. When I get there, we're going to have a lot of work to do, and the last thing we need are any distractions. Hysterically sobbing women count as distractions. Rondell agreed and ended the contact. Arcella must have felt the change in his demeanour, or had just reached the end of her mood, and looked up at him, bleary-eyed.
It's going to be okay,
Rondell said awkwardly.
Promise?
Arcella asked.
Yes,
Rondell said, with far more assurance than he felt. He couldn't think of any compelling reasons to support his promise.
and he started to panic when he imagined her asking him to explain just why everything would be okay. So he kissed her. Much to his surprise, she kissed him back. It was wet, what with her tears, and clumsy. She had not practiced the art much herself, not nearly as much as Lady Thena had, perhaps less than even he, but she was enthusiastic, and then a little desperate. "Be the rock," he reminded himself as he kissed her, trying to breathe and kiss and think all at the same time. "Be her point of stability." "Let's head back to the hall," he suggested, when they finally broke apart. He had to change the subject. "Our reinforcements arrive tomorrow, and we need to get ready for them." He gave her one last embrace, and caught one last kiss she insisted upon, and then they walked back to the manor, hand in hand. "I can't believe that worked." "Be the rock," he reminded himself again, when he suppressed the urge to grin like a fool when she looked at him. "Be the rock." Although, he reflected as he stumbled, being the rock wasn't hard to imagine at the moment.